you would assume that if a country does such an important political decision, they would actually know beforehand what they are going to do. But you know, I invested a lot of time into research on Brexit because, to be honest, I don't understand it anymore. I guess no one does. I think on one hand, David Cameron really underestimated the effect on calling for a referendum. I mean, he didn't believe in Brexit himself, and Theresa May did not believe in Brexit herself, and she then had to negotiate. I guess the only one now who believes in Brexit and really wants to get Brexit done is, Boris Johnson. And but still, I don't know. I mean, I feel like there is so much talk about Brexit, but no much thought about how it would affect people, and not only, you know, the well-situated people, but also sick people. I mean, you know, there were a lot of insecurities about how it would affect medical supply. It will affect the research. For example, I know that the UK is really important for cancer research, and there was a lot of exchange between the EU and the UK. So these kind of things were not really thought about, and also the poor people. I mean, there are a lot of issues and problems with the benefit system, and I think it won't get better after Brexit. But the thing is, no one knows, and it would really be important to have like a central information: what is going to happen, when, and where. And so I do understand that your family is kind of dancing limbo, as they would say, and does not really understand, as so many other people. What was interesting for me, I went to a lot of events about Brexit this year. One of them was called Brexit: An Ongoing Transition. It took place in Berlin, and there were different professors. One of them was from Oxford and other universities in the UK. And even though they all had different perspectives on Brexit and what the reasoning is behind, they all agreed that Brexit is something that happened actually before the referendum in 2016. And I wondered what you would say, what they mean by this.
Yeah, I think you could even say that not just that Brexit happened before the referendum, but that kind of becoming part of the EU never really happened. And maybe that's the problem in the first place, that there was, I don't know, this whole European project was not something that was ever massively embraced by Britain. I can definitely confirm that, you know, kind of since I can remember, since even in my childhood, Brussels kind of stood for absurd bureaucracy and ridiculous legislation. It's kind of, Brussels was always that instance which imposed stupid laws, you know, like how straight the banana has to be or how long the cucumber has to be. This is kind of how Europe was sold portrayed in Britain. And there's all, you know, as long as I can remember, we talk about, you know, there's Britain and then there's the continent. When we talk about Europe, we don't mean Britain and Europe. We mean, that which is out there, which is separate from Britain. And, you know, all things like refusing to adopt the euro, to sticking with the pound and sticking with things like miles and Britain always seems to have, I don't know, a problem with, not a problem with being told what to do. There's this kind of, there's this myth that's perpetuated that Brussels wants to tell Britain what to do and Britain will kind of, you know, stand up for itself at all costs. And I definitely think that that we were never really part of the European project. Maybe that's the problem, this mentality. And then, you know, when people like Boris Johnson, it's just kind of, he's just waving a red flag. It's just pushing buttons, and then this whole pent up frustration just comes pouring out. You know, it didn't start with the referendum.
I always thought that the strongest argument for the European Union would be it's since we founded the European Union, it is, as far as I know, the longest period of peace on this continent. So yeah, I mean, I agree. It might be very bureaucratic and sometimes not really transparent to people. And there are definitely lots of issues going on within the European Parliament. But I think the actual thought behind it to save peace in within the European countries should be the number one reason to actually support the idea. So it's interesting how people weigh the priorities. Mm-hmm. yeah, so, but I think that the relationship to the European Union could be like one of the important issues that probably led up to people being more and more against the European Union. But I guess there were also a lot of other issues in the UK, for example. You know, in 2008, they had the economic crisis, which led to the austerity politics afterwards, which is still going on. And so many people are still suffering from it because it led to rising poverty, to higher costs in education, increasing crime rates, and a desolate NHS. NHS is the National Health Service, for our listeners who probably don't know about it. And it was supposed to be, yeah, a really good idea, a really good project, and worked for a long time. But now it gets more and more privatized, and yeah, people don't really get the medical support that they actually need because lack of time, lack of staff. So I wondered if the vote for Brexit probably could also have been, at least for some people, more like a symbolic act to show like, hey, I want to feel some change in this country, and not really so much an act against the European Union.
Yeah, absolutely. You're completely right. I mean, I would say that a majority of people who voted to leave the European Union probably had no real concept of what the European Union is or does. You know, the European Union is absolutely the scapegoat in all of this. Yeah, I mean, people were voting against kind of social inequality and poverty. You know, Britain is actually a very poverty-stricken country in many many respects. It has very low social mobility. That's kind of very, if, you know, if you're born without money, then you're not likely to make money in your lifetime. I absolutely think that the vote for Brexit was kind of an attack on, yeah, life as it was in Britain at the time. But the problem is that people are so short-sighted. You know, they kind of the irony that the Conservatives should say, you know, we'll give you this option, we'll leave the European Union and everything will be brilliant. It's just, yeah, it's a lie. I mean, the thing that people were reacting to was brought about by the Conservatives and by austerity, and it's just people are really gonna suffer. I really believe, you know, suffer a lot more than they already are suffering, and it's just wicked that it's been allowed to get this far. Really,
I remember that there was the big red bus, with the NHS slogan, which said something, we pay £350 million every week to the European Union, and if we leave, then we don't have to, and we can actually push this money into our NHS. And I mean, it's interesting how people actually believed this. And even though people who were responsible for this lie, for example, Nigel Farage, who had to go to the public television and actually agree and confess that he lied, and probably not only him, but I guess he was kind of the actual person who was confronted with this. Yeah, but still people wanted to leave. And I wonder if people were aware soon after that they were misinformed by politicians or even media. If I think of Murdoch, for example, The Sun and stuff. And if you perceive this as misinformation, or maybe people did not really pay much attention.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely believe that people were misinformed. People were lied to, as you just said, the whole thing with the NHS. But yeah, the damage was done. I think people, you know, people don't have that long attention spans. They're kind of not listening anymore. They've hooked onto this idea that, yeah, being in the European Union is expensive. We pay money to be in the European Union. And that money, if we were no longer in the European Union, could be freed up for other things, you know. And it's kind of a simple message and people latch onto it. You know, the notion that we could stay in the European Union and then still, you know, put money into the NHS, that just doesn't kind of, people aren't open for that kind of more complex message. I think people kind of swallowed the propaganda and now are kind of, they've got their opinions. It's like you asked me in the written questions for this interview if I'd ever heard of stories of people who have now changed their minds. You know, they've kind of seen the whole picture and whether they would now, where they originally voted leave, would vote remain. And I actually don't know of anybody like that. I haven't even heard, I think maybe read once on the BBC about maybe somebody who'd come around to a different way of thinking. But I really think that people, it's kind of become, you know, this is the whole Pride and Prejudice thing you're talking about. It's a kind of matter of principle. You know, we voted leave, you know, it's this whole Boris Johnson thing. We need to get the job done. The people have spoken, respect the will of the people. And that people are buying into that, you know, it's as if kind of actually sitting down and having a proper discussion with more information and a more realistic view of what Brexit would entail. You know, that's being sold as a betraying democracy because it's not taking into account the will of the people. Yeah. It's definitely people were misinformed and we're going to pay the price.
You mentioned the title again, Pride and Prejudice. I also hear it from people living in the UK who have European origins, like French, as I mentioned before, in parts of the UK, the xenophobia has risen, and that for some people it is even dangerous if people around them notice that they have a different accent. So I am often in Brighton, and I think that people have a different mindset there. Like, the majority voted against Brexit, like 68% or so were against Brexit. So I don't really notice that so much. I mean, I do notice sometimes that people are kind of, oh, okay, well, this is like a German accent. I mean, I can't deny. I wonder if you heard stories like that from your friends or so, or if you're following the news about hate crime maybe, and what your perception is of this.
I mean, I've heard stories and seen reports about awful kind of people being abused on the street because of, you know, speaking Polish or having a Polish accent, and people suddenly being scared of their own neighbours because they kind of realise that they're very anti-immigration. Once my parents kind of have their base in the northeast of England, in Newcastle, and once we were there around Christmas time, and a policeman actually said to my husband, like, don't let them hear you speak German, about the kind of, you know, the drunken crowds coming out of the pubs. And that shocked me. I mean, I'm aware that British people are often fairly xenophobic, but actually being warned by a policeman, you know, don't open your mouth because they'll realise that you're a foreigner. That was a kind of wake-up moment for me.